This is Michael Gannot with the Middle East Research Center Limited, bringing you Insight to Israel, the truth about the greatness of the Jewish state and its struggle for sovereignty and security, every Sunday at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
This is Michael Gannot with Insight to Israel, brought to you by America's Web Radio. And I want to thank all the guys at America's Web Radio for allowing for Insight to Israel to be brought to the grassroots of the United States of America, the Patriot Conservatives that stand for truth. And thank you guys for all that you do. You're the best. I also want to take just a few minutes and thank everyone for Hershey's for Heroes. I just got in two more boxes of 200 chocolate bars for the soldiers. And if you don't know what Hershey's for Heroes is, you should Google Hershey's for Heroes, and you will find it on Facebook. My website will be up at the end of January. The impact that this program is having on the morale of the Israeli soldier is amazing. And it shows the heart of the American people at the grassroots level to support this country. And I can't say enough when it comes to thank you to those who have participated and not been a spectator in this project. With that being said, if you're interested, please send me an email at mgano@insighttoisrael.com. mgano, G-A-N-O-E, at insighttoisrael.com. Be more than happy to send you any information or answer any questions that you may have. So, moving forward, it is another beautiful day in the Jewish state, and I am sitting here in a coffee shop in, how do you say that?
Givatayim,
which is right outside of Tel Aviv. Actually, it's on the border. But I'm sitting here with a young lady that I had met a few months ago, back in October. And she is pretty unique. I actually forgot that I met you until how I came across Orit was a buddy of mine in Trinidad and Tobago working for an oil company, Dave. I'm a little brain dead. Dave McCormack, who will be heading to Israel next month. David sent me an email, and he said, Michael, you got to check this girl out. And I saw this video that she did about Judea and Samaria. Can I leave it broad and say Judea and Samaria? We're talking about Ariel.
Judea and Samaria. All of Israel, essentially, but yeah.
Okay. Which is otherwise known by the left as the West Bank. And I personally don't acknowledge it as the West Bank. When folks here talk to me and they say West Bank, I would correct them and say, you mean Judea and Samaria.
Good for you.
So anyway, he sent me this video, and I was shocked. I was like, I've got to talk to this girl and get her on my radio show. When I emailed Orit, come to find out, I met her back in October at a Shabbat dinner. Which made it more interesting because sometimes I read, I'm a little brain dead, and I meet so many people, and I just forget things.
I think it was actually, to help your memory, I think it was actually a Rosh Hashanah, Jewish New Year's dinner.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Rosh Hashanah, that's exactly what I meant, which is in October.
Mm-hmm.
And come to find out, I had your name already programmed in my phone.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, it's good to have you here, Orit.
Pleasure to be here, and thanks for letting me do this interview in a beautiful cafe and give a time. As I eat my breakfast, no one else can see that I'm talking with my mouth full, so benefits of radio.
Well, you know what? When you're chomping up and down a little bit, it kind of sets the tone. And, you know, people, I want the whole point sometimes in me doing this where I am is because I want people to have a feel for this country.
Mm-hmm.
And to encourage them to come to Israel. And a lot of Americans know why they support Israel historically, biblically, but they don't know the modern-day Israel that gives to the world in technology, agriculture, medicine, and the vast amounts of humanitarian work that this country does around the world. And, you know, maybe you can elaborate on that as an Israeli.
Well, lot of Israel advocacy organizations say what Israel gives to the world. I mean, Israel's a leader in high tech, agrotech, biotech. We develop technologies that help people worldwide, that make our lives better everywhere, computers. I mean, it's an amazing place that was built out of swampland and desert, and we created beautiful homes and apartments and modern cities and theater and culture. But this is where I kind of am differing from the mainstream pro-Israel organizations. I don't give the credit to Israel. I give the credit to the people of Israel.
Right.
And we're very much focused on the state of Israel because it's so delegitimized.
Right.
That, look what Israel did. Look what, you know what? It's the people that did it. And I want to give the props to the people. I'm a citizen here. Everything that people say and want and act on behalf of Israel for, oftentimes they say it's for the benefit of the state. Unless they hate us, then it's for the delegitimization of the state. But I'm saying I want everything to be for the benefit of the people.
Right.
And I think, and why I'm saying that is that it gets a little dangerous to put too much emphasis on the state, because then the state becomes an object of worship, and we miss out on helping the people here, who are the pioneers, who have to live with and thrive with or suffer with every day the consequences of the policies that are often forced upon us by international forces and of course lately the American administration.
Right. Wow. Listen, Orit, that's very well said, because a lot of times down here in Tel Aviv, where it's not, I say this respectfully because I love being here, in the sense that, you know, that does, as someone who comes from the States, it does have a little more to offer me. Now, I have to tell you, there's a part of living in Jerusalem that I miss, because there is, this is the capital that's unacknowledged by the world. This is the only country in the world where the capital, where all the embassies are not in the capital.
Right.
And to me, that's out of fear, and also thumbing your nose at the sacrifice the people here have made, mm-hmm. to build this country in 65 years. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. So,
and let me add that to the extent that the government allows the people to flower in not placing too many obstacles with law or whatnot, then we do amazing.
Right.
Amazing.
Absolutely. You know, wow, that's great that you said that, because this takes me all the way back. I always say that if it had not been for Hashem giving Torah to the Jewish people, then I would not have a Constitution or Bill of Rights,
mm-hmm.
which means I would lack to be a free man.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the United States, I'm making the comparison, even though the United States has not been perfect in everything it does, no country is, look at the pioneers in the West that formed and shaped, that said, we don't need the government to take care of us. We can take care of ourselves. All you need to do is to make sure that our rights as a free people are protected.
Exactly.
And that goes, I see the difference in the mentality between here in Tel Aviv and those people in Judea and Samaria,
mm-hmm.
who are the pioneers,
yeah,
who have gone into places and lived in places that are controversial, where their life is threatened,
mm-hmm.
but they say, this is our land, and we're going to need it out, we're going to build it, and we're going to make it successful and bloom.
Yeah, that is part of the sense of the Jewish manifest destiny. And I do think the Constitution is a very Jewish document.
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, our founding fathers, as much as the left is trying to rewrite American history,
mm-hmm.
and call them philanderers and whoremongers and adulterers, which is a lie, because they're scared of that independence, because the government gives you everything you need from cradle to grave, which it
mm-hmm.
does not.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the failure of the American government to do that. And so, I guess, part of the message that I've been bringing to people here without even knowing is, don't depend on your government to take care of you.
Yes.
Don't depend on your military to defend you. You have, first and foremost, have the responsibility to defend yourselves as a free people.
Yes.
And then your military picks up where you're not able to.
Right.
So, moving forward, listen, you're an American born.
Yes.
And where were you raised?
I was born and raised in Los Angeles. I guess that's where I get my kind of entertainment side.
And, hey, you know what? It's crazy. I don't want to go too deep into this, but it's amazing how California was one of the most conservative, prosperous, independent states in the United States back in the day, especially after World War II. That it was the breadbasket of the United States. Mm-hmm. With the, they have the kind of weather you have here in Israel. The skiing, the ocean, you know, the Pacific, and all
it's
those
an amazing
things.
Beautiful state.
Absolutely.
I mean, I hope it doesn't go down the tubes.
Well, it's too late. But anyway, that's another story. So, okay, so here you are. You're an American, and you're here in Israel now. So you were born in L.A.
Yeah.
And obviously, I can tell by looking at you. I say respectfully, you're a beautiful woman, and your mother, obviously, I asked you this earlier, your mother's Israeli.
Mm-hmm. Israeli of Iraqi descent.
Of Iraqi descent, mm-hmm. Wow.
Born in Baghdad.
Wow. Now,
Babylonian, she's Babylonian.
So here's the interesting thing. See, a lot of people don't trace a history all the way back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're kind of stuck in the here and now, or we only go 10 years, 50 years back. But how did your mother end up in Israel?
Well, she was 2 years old when she came here with her family.
From Iraq.
There was a wave of pogroms against Jews with the founding of the state of Israel.
Now, explain what a pogrom is for our listeners.
A pogrom is basically an unorganized, sometimes spontaneous, sometimes not, onslaught of assault on regular Jews living in a certain place. So
right.
It's just violence against them, street violence.
Right.
Often from the street, from people. Sometimes with the
and it's not
with
government organized so much as it is.
Maybe it's government encouraged and authorities,
right.
You know, play a role.
Right. So obviously your grandparents came to Israel.
Yeah, and on my father's side are Auschwitz survivors, Holocaust survivors.
Wow.
So kind of like
from the Shoah.
Uh huh.
The Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So I have a both sides. Two sides of persecution against Jews.
Wow.
The Eastern and the Western, I guess you could say.
So how did your parents meet?
They met at a party at Tel Aviv University when my dad was here as a tourist.
So your mother, I would say your mother has a predominant genes?
In terms of...
You're...
I'm the only one who came out brown for my sisters.
Really?
Yeah, they're all white. They're all pasty white.
But they all have the naturally curly hair.
I'm the only one who got that real Sephardic look.
Wow. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Are your parents, can I ask you, how old are you?
Undisclosed.
Undisclosed? Come on, you're a liberated woman.
Nope. I like to keep it a mystery.
So that means you're in your 30s.
No comment.
So your parents meet, and they how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have three sisters.
Wow, no brothers.
Nope.
You know, I think folks missing out on having a brother.
I really feel like we missed out.
I mean, brother three times, and mm-hmm. I've been a blessing.
Yeah.
So
I think I'd understand men better if I had a brother. I think that's why in Jewish tradition, you're like the mitzvah, the commandment is to have a parent to have a son and a daughter because it enables your children to learn about the opposite sex.
Right. No, absolutely. And you know what? Every sister needs a brother to protect her.
Mm.
I think that's... there's not too many women I respect in the world because respect is earned.
Mm.
But when I look at the lives of my mother and my two sisters, mm-hmm. and give my life for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're amazing women. Amazing women. So your parents meet. You have... You and two sisters, where do you fall in the ranking?
I'm second to oldest.
Second in command. I'm the same way out of four.
Yeah.
So, now, you're very activist, and we're going to get into that activity in the next segment. But does your family live here?
No, my family's still in Los Angeles.
So your parents met here mm-hmm. in Israel, and then they moved to L.A.?
Yeah, they got married, and then...
Are they still married? Can I ask that?
Yes, they're married.
How many years?
I think they just celebrated their, 70, they got married 73.
Okay.
So, 40,
wow.
31 years?
Wow.
No, wait, 40, wait.
Well, I'm 43, and I was born in 70.
31 years.
So they've been married about 40 years.
Yeah.
Because I'm 43, and if they were married
right.
in 70,
73, yeah.
So they've been married about 40 years. Wow,
yeah, crazy.
Wow, wow.
Crazy.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I applaud your parents, by the way. It takes a lot.
In this day and age, you know, I mean, you always have to ask, are your parents together? Because you never know these days.
Well, the good thing is, after you've been married that long, where else are you going to go? Because nobody else is going to want you. So why did your parents move to L.A. and leave Israel?
My dad didn't want to make Aliyah, I guess. He didn't want to make the what they call the ascent to Israel.
Right.
And they were so in love, and she said, all right, I'll follow you.
Wow, that takes a strong woman
mm-hmm.
to say that.
Yeah.
Some women today see that as weak.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a strong woman
mm-hmm.
to say, you know what, I trust you. We're going to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I applaud that.
And I'm sure, hopefully they'll come back here. I hope they'll retire here and whatnot.
As soon as you have children, we need lots of Jewish
yeah,
babies.
Yeah, although I have a lot of nieces and nephews, so.
Oh, okay.
So
we're going to have to find another way. So your sisters live here?
No, they live in one in New York and one's in Los Angeles.
Okay. So what we need just get them here.
Yeah, the whole family and their nieces and nephews. Well, that'll help the demographics.
Absolutely. So what made you? Now, you grew up in L.A. You went to college where?
I bounced around college. I went to a variety of colleges. I transferred. I went to seminary in Jerusalem.
Really?
I went to Yeshiva University's Women's Division, Stern College for Women. I went to Columbia for almost a semester, Bar Ilan University. And then I ended up in a small liberal arts college in Los Angeles that's now called American Jewish University.
Okay.
And I have my BA, I have my master's from a place in Jerusalem called Schechter Institute of Jewish Studies.
Okay.
So I have a master's in Bible and Jewish thought.
Nice. So, you had been to Israel, obviously, because you have relatives here, I take it.
Yeah, I've been here. I've actually been in Israel, living in Israel, altogether, maybe about 11 years.
Oh, okay, yeah. Nice. So, but before you actually made the decision to come here, you'd been here quite a few times?
Yeah, with family or at school. I studied in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
So I was familiar with the country. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So,
intimately familiar.
What, 11 years ago, how old were you when you came?
Now,
let me say this. That there's a reason why I'm asking, because it sets a time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can refrain from answering that question. It's okay. But I think it sets a time frame for our listeners.
I came here after college.
Okay.
After I got my bachelor's, I got a job offer. I always wanted to come back, but when I got a job offer, that's when I decided to really, like, settle here permanently.
So you felt a connection to the land?
Very much so. I wanted to not live under the sheltered Jewish communities of Los Angeles. I felt that here I could be much more creative because I don't have to be so consciously aware of my Jewish identity all the time,
right.
Which is kind of like a Zionist manifesto, which is a lot of the Zionist pioneers said, let's be in a place where we don't have to be doctors and lawyers and all these middle-class professions. We can own a bar and still be Jewish. We could own a restaurant and be Jewish. We could work the land and be very
and
Jewish.
And you're not always labeled. From my observation, look, I spent a lot of time in New York before I actually came here, before I realized I was even coming. But I found myself going to New York on the weekends from Washington, D.C. to try and network and get a feel, you know, a little bit for Israel, because I wasn't feeling Israel, obviously, from New York City,
mm-hmm.
But I wanted to get a feel for the mindset, and I saw whole communities, a lot of Orthodox, but I saw whole communities of Jewish folks, and of course at the time there's this stereotypical mindset, the bagels, which have nothing to do with
mm-hmm.
being Jewish.
Yeah.
I kind of don't even like the stereotype,
yeah.
because it doesn't portray who you really are.
Yeah.
And I, you know, here, you don't have to always be thinking I'm Jewish, I'm Jewish,
exactly.
I'm Jewish, like you do in the United States.
Exactly.
Where when someone that's not Jewish sees you, that's the first thing, you're Jewish. It's not that you're a doctor or you're a business
exactly.
owner.
Exactly.
So I think that's one thing that I really do appreciate, even though I use the term Jewish state a lot, because that's what it is. I understand where you're coming from with that. So you felt this connection and you come home. What did your parents think? What did your family think?
They were supportive. I mean, they're Zionists, and My mom grew up here. She had family here. She has family here, so they were very supportive.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Good. I mean, it's good.
Listen, my parents are very tolerant of everything, tolerant and supportive of everything I do. So
yeah.
It's a big source of strength that they're that open-minded, and they never really try to push me in any one direction.
Right, right.
Which is a good parenting tip.
Very good. So your sisters are married. They're not here. How many children do they have?
Altogether, I have 9 nieces and nephews.
So what was it? What was it like when you first came to adapt? I mean, did you find?
I mean, I was familiar with culture. Listen, it really helps to come in with a job. I worked in a nonprofit organization doing communications, and it gives you money, it gives you a framework, it gives you a social life. So my absorption was easier than I think a lot of people's, even though I did live here before and it was much harder the first time. I already kind of was a little wiser, because there is a culture, there is a different mentality here. It is harder. Life is harder here. There's no question that it's harder to make money. It's harder. I'll admit it, and maybe, you know, I don't mean to kind of ruin the rosy image everyone
right.
has of Israel, but customer service is harder here.
Right.
We don't have that, like,
right.
American customer's always right mentality. There are wars. There is a constant aggression against Israel. So, terror attacks or whatnot. So, but the second time I was wiser, I had a job, but, I mean, things started to turn for me about a year since I got here. The second, as they call, Intifada broke out, which is basically a terror war against Israel.
Yeah, and that was back in when 2006?
Broke out in 2000.
2000, okay.
So that's when kind of like the whole rosy picture of coming here and being Israeli and making Aliyah, it kind of shattered a little bit, because there were real
issues.
Life and death issues that I had to deal with. I mean,
right.
there were periods where every other week there was a terrorist attack within
a
mile
like?
Radius.
What's that like?
It's scary as hell. It's scary. It's
scary as...
It's scary.
As all get out.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, go ahead.
Excuse me.
You're fine.
It's very scary. I was very angry. And even before that, I was kind of buying into the whole peace utopia vision of, like, if only we give them land and negotiate land of Israel, everything will be rosy. And it kind of broke that political framework that I was buying into of, like, all they want is a state. Because to take your own child, your young, I don't know, 16-year-old or 18-year-old or whatever, strap a bomb to that person,
right.
send them in to kill innocent people, that's not resistance, that's hate.
Right.
That's fanaticism.
Absolutely.
And so it kind of like dawned on me, and I went through this intellectual journey to figure out what was right and wrong in this whole mess that's here. And I was very angry.
Yeah.
And I was very angry that Israel was appeasing it. I felt that the government of Israel was appeasing this
right.
terror.
Ori, let me say this. I want the listeners to hear this emphatically. This is not about land. This is not about anything else. But two things. An ideology which exists here that exists all around the world. It is Islamic ideology cloaked in religion. And this is also about a Jewish presence. That's it. And if you think for one second these people can be appeased, this ideology can be reconciled, that it can be, that agreements can be signed with it, that will be fulfilled, you are lying to yourself. America, you better gear up, because this thing is bigger than what you realize. And this country is on the front lines. I can't say that enough. And I'm not speaking for a read, but I will say this emphatically, and I challenge anyone, and I've already infiltrated the Muslim ranks in the old city of Jerusalem. There is no Allah, okay? There's no virgins waiting. The Quran is a lie, and forgive me, but I'm just going to... This is my show. Muhammad was a self-appointed, bloodthirsty, child-raping, false prophet. When we tell that truth, we will know how to deal with this enemy. When we tell that truth, there's no Allah. He does not exist. It's a figmentation. It's a false ideology. And that's what you're faced with. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. You've just released all these prisoners, and you've done this time and time again. And what do you get back? Dead children.
Yeah, it's just to think of the reason the prisoners, what these families have to go through, the victims of these terrorist attacks. It's just heartbreaking, and it makes me so angry.
And the pioneers back in the old day, back in 48, would have never done that.
Yeah.
They would have never done it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that could go all day on that.
Yeah, yeah,
it kills me just to think about what your people go through.
Yeah.
And anyway, so moving forward, you're here in Israel. And look, as an American, I can't begin to wrap my mind around. I was here during the rockets in November, and I was running out in the street and did video, and my military friends were trying to drag me down to the bomb shelter. But I cannot wrap my mind around living under that cloud.
And what's sad is that it's almost become routine, you know? It's all the checks, security checks, and just knowing that we have to have a bomb shelter in our home. You know, when there's real peace is when you build a home here, you don't have to think about where you're going to put the bomb shelter.
Right, right. You know, there's a lot of Americans that say, pray for the peace of Israel, and I say that peace will come when the soldier's aim is sure.
Mm-hmm.
And their shot is complete.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot appease wickedness. You have to you have to destroy it.
Yeah.
And then, I know it seems people don't like war and it seems like savagery at the time, but when you have a moral compass and you have principles that you live by that protect life and give liberty, when wickedness comes, once you destroy it, and get rid of it, then you can get back to normal.
You also, you help the people who are wicked or who are victims of those wickedness.
Right.
Like when you go after and you completely destroy and neutralize the sources of destruction, the people in their midst who are dragged into it, they're helped.
Right.
Because otherwise you're just in this prolonged war. You're just in a prolonged war, and it's a war of attrition. We see what happened with the Palestinians. I mean, you don't go after the real bad guys. You cut off the head of the snake, then the regular Palestinians, they're also victimized because, you know, let me give an example. I mean, you don't go after the rocket attacks in the south, and you don't completely obliterate that network. Then okay, they shoot rockets. They shoot rockets. Then IDF goes in. They'll keep shooting rockets again. IDF goes in. And it's this like just prolonged.
It's a cycle.
Cycle, and we all suffer from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, that's great stuff. Listen, as an American that is now Israeli, what you're saying is important not only for your people to hear, but for Americans to hear,
mm-hmm.
because the media covers up. Look. I went to the prison where the people were protesting back 2 months ago, the release of the prisoners. I did a live stream video. People were and Americans could see it, and they were coming on and making comments like, we'd never see this in the regular media, ever. And so what you're saying is a very important message that represents your people, and I certainly do respect and appreciate it. We have 1 minute. For the segment, so is up with, it goes by fast. So, listen, tell me in 1 minute, what message do you have for Americans that support this country?
You know, I think what a major message of mine is, and it's not even a political message.
The non-Jews. Speak to the non-Jewish people that support this country.
I don't have a slogan. I don't have a slogan message.
Speak from your heart. We're not looking for a slogan.
Okay, this is what I'm after. Let Jews keep their homes. Do whatever you can to make sure no one is ever thrown out of their home again for the sake of peace. That to me is like the epitome of the worst kind of appeasement of evil that we can see, where that in these peace negotiations, to even consider throwing a Jew out of their home because they're a Jew as a part of a solution is just anathema, and that's what I'm fighting.
Absolutely.
And support the people of Israel. Yes, support the state in the sense that it's the protectorate of the people, but let's love the people who give of their lives every day to be here.
All right. That sounds good. Listen, we'll be right back, and thank you for the time. Thank you to everyone that listens. And We'll be right back. This is Michael Gano with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving 3 right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Gano. Thank you, God bless Patriot conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
A prophecy, and every Jew should be here, or it wasn't. You can't have both sides. You can't, oh, you want us to come home for whatever reason, or every Jew should be here to defend this country. And let their children serve honorably, the American Jews specifically. What an honor that you might come here, and it's a tough country. I just realized I'm paying for half a gallon of milk. I'm paying $5. $5 for half a gallon
in
of
Israel?
Milk. Yeah. I did the numbers. Wow. The other day, my mom and I were talking, and most of my money is spent during traveling around the country to show what goes on here. That's vital. But I calculated 20 shekels comes out to about $5.
Wow.
And I'm paying $5 for half a gallon
Crazy.
Of milk. That's how much you get a whole gallon of milk. My mom's like, well, why don't you buy a whole gallon? I said, they don't sell it here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is a tough country. But you know what? Nothing ever is ever appreciated that comes easy.
Yeah.
And I say to the American Jews, man, you come here, and if you're wearing a kippah, don't you talk to me about your religion unless you come here and listen to Hashem, because by faith Abraham sojourned into a land that he knew not and trusted God. And I believe that if you come home, your life will be blessed, that you will prosper, bring your ingenuity, your money, your business, your intelligence, your creativity. Come here and make this country better. Bless the people that have... This country is born out of bronze and brains.
Yep.
Bronze, brains, and blood.
Mm-hmm.
And let your children serve honorably to defend the Jewish state next to these young people who have to serve mandatorily to defend this country. And I'll tell you, I've met very few that say, oh, I have to do it, I have to do it, with that attitude. Most of them, when you talk to them, we must do it.
Well, you know, I mean, it is a democratic country. But I see as a soldier, I can understand why a soldier wouldn't want to serve. But I'll tell you why. Because sometimes the army isn't always used to defend. I mean, we remember in 2005, the army, during the Gaza withdrawal, the army was used to evacuate a civilian population.
Right.
So I wish and I hope for Israel to channel the IDF into really combating evil and at its source, rather than just being a political tool for decisions that are not entirely made by Israel, but are made by the American administration or the international community.
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, I'm glad you said that, because this is actually Ariel Sharon passed away. If there's one thing I could emphasize to anyone, don't let your ladder be overshadowed by your, don't let your former be overshadowed by your latter, which means, when I say that, don't do great things in the beginning, and then all you're remembered for are the bad things you did in the end.
Yeah.
Because he was a great leader militarily, a great general, but now, from the things I've read, and this is what I've heard from other people, but as prime minister, when he sold his people out, politically, when it's so disheartening, because I see it in the United States. These guys get into they're great military leaders, they get into politics, and then they compromise.
A great military leader does not necessarily translate into an ethical thinker, person, politician. I mean, it's important to have a strong military background, and you want to show that you can you're a good fighter, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're ethical in other areas.
You're right, a good politician in other ways. So, so you are here in Israel. Now, look, in spite of the fact we know you're in your 30s.
Okay, I'll give you that much.
Why? Now, I don't know when your quote-unquote activism started, but whenever it started, and I'm sure that it started when you, before you even came here, because none of these things are done overnight.
You know what? I think it really started with the Oslo terror war that was launched in 2000.
Under Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And that was when, I call him Mule Lips.
Mule Lips?
You know, like Mule Goat.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Arafat. Yeah,
Arafat had that lower lip.
Yeah.
I picture a mule, you
That's
know what
so
I mean?
That's so funny. Mm-hmm.
Under with Perez.
Yeah.
And hey, here comes the police.
They're right. Coming to arrest me.
Maybe we can get them on the radio show. What are they talking about? Parking?
Yeah, parking. People don't realize in Israel, you know, we have parking issues too.
Right. You do have, just like Washington, D.C.
Right.
Except the police do not take the time to drive down and tell everybody you need to move your car. They just give you a $50 ticket. So anyway, so this activism that you're now currently engaged in, how did this come about for you? What you said during that time in the 90s, what did you...
I can't say I was really an activist in high school and in college.
Okay.
I really, because I told you, I was a kind of a two-state believer.
Yeah.
Until the Intifada.
Wow, I'm glad you came over to the other side.
Yeah. It started with the Oslo terror war in 2000. Or at least terror attacks against Israel, and I was like, oh my God, this is not about land, they hate us, you know, it's about us being here, and this was like a revolution in my thinking, and that's when I started writing a lot of columns.
Did you get any kickback from that, like your friends?
A little bit, but I think a lot of people, I clarified things for them.
Yeah.
I got the most kickback, I think, was when I opposed the Gaza withdrawal. People didn't understand it. I mean, I was so going against the mainstream.
There were a lot of people arrested during that time by the government, by the military.
Yeah.
And I know some, actually, some good friends of mine here.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine actually met his wife because he got thrown in jail. He was down there protesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Something good came out of
it. And she got put in jail, and she's from Hungary. And he's American. He was a lone soldier in Golani, and they met because she got thrown in jail.
Oh, great.
For protesting that withdrawal. So, now, were you actually down there during the protest?
I lived there for about 3 weeks. But I was dragged out of a synagogue in a community called Neve de Kali.
Really?
Yeah, the IDF dragged me out of synagogue.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't fathom this, because these are soldiers, and I don't say this against the soldiers, because they were given orders of what to do. I can't imagine being Jewish.
They were also psychologically trained. They underwent psychologically training to hold back their emotion and not be emotionally swayed by the pleas of the people.
Right.
It was very sad.
You know, look, it kind of falls... that training, you know, is also in the U.S. military. That training, to a degree, is for a reason, because Americans, I think they should know that the media gets all around these soldiers. And the Muslims, I don't like the word Palestinian, but just for the audience's sake, the Muslims get around, they spit on them, they throw rocks at them. So they have to be so disciplined in a way. So it kind of works. It worked as a negative in that time.
Well, you need to be psychologically trained, but to fight an enemy, not to evacuate a civilian population.
Right.
For example, so much effort was placed in the psychological training of soldiers to expel Jews, and then a year later, the Lebanon War happened, and the IDF couldn't cope with that war. I mean, it was... Some people called it a loss. Yeah. And it was tough. And all that energy was taken to prepare the army for a real war of aggression.
Right.
We would have done much better in that war.
Yeah. Yeah. And I couldn't see where you're coming from with that. There's a lot of things I still have to learn about, you know, after being here for over a year. So being dragged out of a synagogue, so what'd that do to you? Like,
it was very traumatic. It caused me a little bit... I went through a little bit crisis in my Zionism, because how could the state of Israel... Why, I came to the state of Israel, the Jewish state, to be kicked out of a synagogue? Like, seriously?
Yeah.
You know, so... About a year later, I took a break. A few years later, I took a break and went back to the U.S. just to chill out a little bit because I was very disillusioned by the government, very disillusioned by the system, by the weakness of the government. And I think a lot of it has to do with they're not being real checks and balances. We don't have a constitution like the U.S. It is a robust democracy and that there's disagreement, but I think the way the parliament is set up, it's rigged for moral compromise, unfortunately.
Wow. So that's a very powerful statement.
Mm-hmm.
That's very powerful.
Because all decisions are made. Everyone's worried about power and their position. So
right.
In a parliamentary system, you have to make deals with parties who are at fundamental odds with you.
Yeah.
And so you make deals and you compromise on principles. And we don't have direct elections of our leaders. People get voted, they're on lists for their parties, so you don't really feel that, you know, you can write to a senator and pressure that senator. We don't have senators or Knesset members to do something because he didn't get in on the merits of his own personality, character, platform. Most Knesset members were on a list that was elected.
Wow. So could you run for parliament if you wanted, or be...
I could be on a list. I mean, someone can appoint me to their list, I guess. Maybe one day.
Have you ever thought about it?
Time, maybe.
Yeah. Well, don't wait for too long. Ain't none of us getting younger,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, wow, that's amazing. So, during that time that you were in the States, I mean, I guess when you said that, I'm picturing you in your home and you're standing in your kitchen and you're like talking to your mom, like, Mom, how could this happen? And what'd your parents think about what you went through, what you were faced with? As someone who, as Israelis, your mother being Israeli,
right,
that lived in the U.S.
Well, my mother, I think she wasn't critical of the withdrawal. My father was.
Most men usually are because they're, and I say that respectfully, women are emotional creatures. That's the way you're made. So it's not always cut and dry for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It takes sometimes life experiences to kind of get that way.
I actually think what freaked my mom out, I was kind of just, I wanted to rebel from ideology entirely or idealism. I like felt like I gave so much. I wanted to be selfish. What freaked my mom out more was that I decided to be an actress. I went back to L.A. and I'm like, I want the most shallow life possible.
Right. That's L.A.
I thought, you know, if I
weren't... Your lips would be all fat right now.
If I weren't an idealist, if I weren't a Zionist, if I weren't someone really crusading for the safety of the Jewish people, what would I have done? I probably would have gone into entertainment.
Right. No, so I mean, I see like, that on your Facebook page. You know, you have that... look, you have a presence.
Mm-hmm.
And you have an aura. And you know, those things come from a few things. Number one, it's something that's developed.
Mm-hmm.
It's more nurtured, not nature.
Mm.
We can use that in one of two ways. Like you just stated, I'm summarizing what you said. Mm-hmm. We can use it for our own selfish purposes, self-gain, self-indulgence, you know. And or we can use it for the benefit of not only ourselves but others around us. And so that's I'm glad that you took that perspective because a lot of people don't.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't say, okay, I want to make my life better, but at the same time, you know what? How can I be a leader and moral principle for others around me when I see things going bad?
Yeah, and I have to say two things about that. First of all, I mean, when I did move to L.A., I did store my idealism by writing this book about the withdrawal from Gaza.
Book that we're looking at now.
Yeah, it's called The Settler, and it follows a young Jewish woman's crisis of faith after she was kicked out of her home by the IDF, to which her brother lost his life, too. So
really?
So
tell us about that.
The novel, the heroine.
Oh, that's right. You
this
don't have a
heroine.
Brother.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're writing?
Exactly.
You don't have a brother, and you're
book.
Writing a book
exactly.
about having a brother.
Exactly. And there were true stories. Heartbreaking that...
Was there... You obviously had someone in mind, or a family, or someone, a friend or that you had in mind in order to write about a brother that lost his life. Was
right.
there anyone specific?
I interviewed one young woman, heartbreaking. Her brother... He wasn't a soldier, but he went to go put a fence up around a community to guard it from terrorist attacks, and he was shot in the neck by a terrorist.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And what did the IDF do? You know, they The family got evacuated from the home, but people don't understand, his bones had to be removed. The IDF removed his bones from the ground. Can you imagine?
You're kidding me.
Yeah, the hall, the cemeteries there were uprooted. The bones were taken out and reinterred.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. See, those are things we don't think about.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
And there was, you know, one woman, a heartbreaking story. Her son was in the Navy. Very valiant warrior, gave his life to service, was so proud of his service, and her family was evacuated, and his bones had to be removed. Her family was evacuated by the entity to which he gave his life, you know?
Wow.
So it's all these, and these stories aren't being told.
Right.
So I wanted to tell them stories. So I did do a lot of interviews of evacuees. There was a segment, I don't know how large the phenomenon was, but there was, whether it was a minority or even more than that, of those who really started questioning a lot of authority and institution, be it rabbis, be it religion, be it Zionism, be it the political system. There was a huge crisis of faith. So I kind of stored my idealism by writing this, and it's finally out, thank God.
How long did it take you to write this book?
From about 2005 till I released it last year. It's like a 8 years in the making.
Yeah. I think in order to write something of that magnitude, you have to have overtime experiences.
Yeah, and it's my first novel, so stylistically there's a lot to learn about writing a novel.
You know, I've interviewed some other writers,
mm-hmm.
and they always come from this, from a novel standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more of a historian type guy. Like, I'd like to read the facts. You know, I'm not much of a novel. I will read this, though, I promise you. Why do you think that a lot of... Because I've interviewed yourself,
mm-hmm.
And two other women that have written novels along the same lines, talking about their history and what goes on here. Why do you think it comes from that standpoint instead of a cold-hearted, dead facts?
Well, I don't know. Do we want to get into differences between men and women?
That just came to my mind,
yeah.
Actually. I think I answered my own question mentally.
I mean, men do write novels, but,
right.
You know, women, we're very attuned to emotions, often more than just, you know, hard, cold facts. It's like
right.
Left brain, right brain thing.
Right.
There are, I think, just in our nature, probably more men scientists, you know, than female scientists. I could be wrong, but probably if you count, that's the case. So women like stories.
Right.
We like drama. But there are men that write novels, too. So
right.
We don't have to... But I remember in a lot of writing classes, the majority of people in novel writing workshops were women.
Yeah.
We're communicators.
Yeah.
We like to communicate.
Right, right. So, I noticed here in the flap of the book that mm-hmm. you dedicated this to your mother and father, your Abba and Eva.
Yes, just because they're of their incredible support. I mean, I could not have done everything I've done without their support, whether it was emotional, financial, spiritual, believing in me. They've been very patient and tolerant of me, so...
That takes a lot, because, I can relate to that in the sense that after working in politics and making no money,
mm-hmm.
and at 43 and now, I'm still, like, and I say this sharing, not airing, I have to raise all my own funds to be here. So for me, it being 43, when I got ready to come here, my brother's like, who has a wife and three children, you know, and a house and two cars and all these things that he has responsibilities for. He's like, you need to be thinking about retirement and all these other things. And I'm like, in 08, I lost everything in my retirement, you know. So it does take a lot of patience.
And I wanted to add something about that. It's another point I wanted to make earlier when you talk about people living idealistically as opposed to selfishly. There's a trend that I don't like, and I know it sounds critical, but the people living here, I think the people living here are the ones that sacrifice the most for Israel, the state, the free world, Jews abroad. And I just see a lot of activism, and I said this before, is focused on the state and the institutions.
Right.
And I think the people are the ones that are the real heroes.
Absolutely. Wow.
And
it's very powerful.
A lot of Jews in wealthy countries, they look to Israel to remain a prestigious state so that they can be comfortable and maintain their quality of life in the diaspora. Yeah. Harsh. Harsh.
I like it. I like harsh.
Yeah.
We need that.
Yeah.
Because we live in such a shallow world. When you take that shovel and you dig deep beyond the surface, people don't want it. I always compare it to when you see your reflection in a body of water. And we're not always apt to change unless there's some life-stirring moment like what you had,
mm-hmm.
unless it shakes us to our core. Mm-hmm. Life has to do that to us.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, we're not apt to change. So we look in that pool of water. And if we don't like what we see, instead of changing what we see, we stick our hand down in the bottom and muck up the bottom and clouds the water. Therefore, we don't see our reflection any longer.
Mm.
So we don't have to deal with it.
Ah.
You know? And that's what folks don't like.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I am thankful. I'm thankful for the way I was raised in the same manner, because my parents, especially my mother, always emphasized, no matter what, you defend, you stand with the Jewish people for their land.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, you stand with them. Because she would read to us Torah and the prophets
mm-hmm.
every night for an hour, 5 nights a week. And sometimes I just didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was good for me. Anyway, so that's a very powerful statement you're making that people need to hear. So you've written this book, and it's been out for a year. How's it done?
Sales have not been amazing. It's sold. I'm hoping it'll sell more.
We're going to get you there.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
It is ultimately self-published. I started a publishing company called Route 60, which is the route through Judea and Samaria.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell us about that. How did this...
I thought about it with a friend who's also an author, and we were thinking of starting something together, and just Route 60 seemed like the perfect title because it's the road of the patriarchs. It's where
right.
it's where this conflict is kind of centered,
right.
because it's in Judea and Samaria. It's where Palestinians and Israelis drive together. It's where these two cultures kind of clash or merge.
Where rocks are thrown.
Rocks are thrown.
And cars.
Yep. But people don't know that also rocks are thrown, but they also shop together at, you know, this supermarket off the road. So
right.
it's like this weird mix, and if we resolve what goes on that road, then the world will be in a better place. But it's just, so since my novel deals with these issues of all these cross cultures and different narratives, I thought that was the right name.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, this...
But I don't have the backing of a huge publishing company that's going
right.
to get me into major magazines or newspapers or with major reviews. Another thing is, I think a lot of people don't want to look into this operation. It's too painful.
Right.
It was swept under the rug when it happened, and a lot of people don't want to open it up. Now, I cover it in a way that's quote-unquote sexy, because she goes to Tel Aviv to a nightclub where she kind of acts out all her rebellion and asks her questions. So there is a love story, and there are other elements that make it sexier than just, wow, you know, Jews throw Jews out of their homes.
Right, right. No, that's good stuff. So do you have anyone, and I'm asking this with the intent, because I do know these other authors
mm-hmm.
that have written fantastic books that live in Judea and Samaria.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's necessity because... A lot of time, book companies, it's all about the numbers, getting the numbers. But I think just from listening to what you're saying, you started this obviously with intent, your publishing company. And I think it would be great if more Israeli authors came on board
yeah.
to work with you on something
mm-hmm.
like this, you know? Do you have a number of Israeli authors that are involved? Or
No, it's pretty much a lone wolf right now.
So you need to get it promoted. It's about
mm-hmm.
promoting it and
yeah.
getting the message out there. Look, and this is one way to do it, is to be on Insight to Israel.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great way. I believe in it. I believe in what
Thank
you're doing.
You. Thank
and,
you.
And so we actually have 4 minutes left.
Okay.
So what I want to do is there's a message... And listening to everything you've said, which is fantastic. First of all, where do you see yourself from here going forward? What do you have a set goal, or is it just kind of like...
Well, hopefully I'll contribute in a very new way. I'll have a family with children, and it's easy to lose sight of that in this activism and career and,
right.
You know, but I would love to start a new community. I mean,
say it again?
I would love to start a new community in Judea and Samaria.
I'm glad that you didn't say settlement. I like the word new neighborhood or new community because it only adds value.
Yeah.
So you want to do those things.
That would be exciting.
Yeah. And knowing Israeli women as strong as they are, you can probably multitask.
Yeah, I guess so.
With that being said, you live in Ariel right now, which is a very controversial area.
Yeah.
And I've actually been up in that area, Ariel University, which was not acknowledged by the Obama administration when Barack Obama came here. So what do you have to say about
that? Well, I think maybe it's controversial internationally, but within Israel, Ariel is completely consensus city. No Israeli government would put it on the table in any negotiations. So Ariel is an amazing city. It has a university. It has a performing arts center. People who care about their community, care about the city. It's something, you know what I love about it? It's a pioneering place. It's a place where you could still make a difference. It's a place where things could still be built and done and created and where you can have an impact. And I get a lot of inspiration from living there.
What do you think it says about the students who go there intentionally? I mean, is it an accident that they're there?
I think, like I said, Ariel's a consensus city. I think the majority of Israelis don't think about
it.
The politics.
Yeah.
They're going to a place where they could get the best education for the best price, for the best department that they want.
Yeah.
And I do want to say, I have nothing against Arabs living there.
Of course.
I do believe we can live together. We do have to get rid of the hate that's there. But I'm not against them. And I think we could have... if we work together, we can make the whole area very special.
Right.
Just last night, I went to Joshua's tomb.
I saw that. I saw that on your Facebook page.
It's in Haris. It's located. It's a neighboring village. Like, I could walk there. It's, people don't like going there. It's Area B, which we won't get into that, but it's under Palestinian civilian control, Israeli military control, and we went there under heavy guard, IDF guard.
Wow.
But if we could work together, you know, it would be an amazing tourist place.
Right.
It's you're going to the Joshua's grave, and you know we could make it beautiful.
Right.
But the Palestinian Authority nixes any type of cooperation. The hatred is so strong against Israel, and especially the quote unquote settlements, the Jewish communities there, that they don't see. They get so caught in their supposed grievances and hate, which a lot of it is inspired by Islam.
It stems in ideology.
That they're actually doing harm to their own people.
Right. No, I agree with you, and I've been up in those areas, and you know, Americans need to come here and see. And if you're Jewish in the United States and you've never been to Israel, shame on you. Shame on you. Because you need to see what your people are going through.
Yeah. And you know, if you ask about messages, and this is to Jews and Christians, anyone coming to Israel, cross the quote-unquote green line. Make sure you go to Judea and Samaria, see it for yourself.
Absolutely.
Come to Ariel. Make sure you go there because there is an effort not only to delegitimize Israel, but to delegitimize the Jews living in Judea and Samaria. Paint us as the left wing, especially, paints us as demons. Come see for yourself.
Yeah.
You can't really know and talk about this place without seeing every inch of this land.
Do you have a website?
I do.
Can look at your book? And
yes. It's oreadarfa.net.
Okay. I'll promote that.
Okay.
And I think folks need to see what you're doing. I think what you're doing is very, very important to be a voice for people who are too busy trying to raise their kids and defend the country.
Mm-hmm.
And you always need those folks that are willing to...
You know, I have to say something. I think I got a lot from America, that I have that independent spirit. And I get that from my American upbringing, where, you know, you can rise out of the log cabin and, you know, become president.
Right.
And I think... Partly because of the social...
Speaking of Abraham Lincoln, right? Was that who you were referring to?
Yes, okay. Of course. You know, I think the socialist roots of this country make people rely a little bit more on the government, where I'm we the people.
Right.
So, and that, you know, kind of interesting, if you want to talk, I think about this, about Moses. He didn't grow up under slavery. He grew up in Pharaoh's palace, so he had a certain sense of empowerment and he saw what the quote-unquote good life could be.
Right.
And that was the person who became a leader to take people out of slavery. And I think there's still, because I was in America and born in an amazing free country that I hope remains amazing and free,
right.
It gives me strength and power.
Listen, I want to say thank you for being here.
Thank you.
God bless you for your fight. I want to say thank you to everyone that listened to Insight to Israel and America's Web Radio. God bless the Patriot Conservative.